We preserve this. You'll find it shortly after the webinar posted at republicmagazine.com/webinar. And we have these every week at the same time. Generally speaking, we've been having them on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. We had a couple of weeks there where we expanded it out all week. And we've been covering the Freedom Law School's 2010 Take Back America Health and Freedom Conference coming up in Southern California, March 12th through 15th. We've had, now for weeks, we've had speakers that are speaking at the event, and today is no exception. That conference is being held in Ontario, California. And for information on the conference itself, and in fact to sign up for it, there's actually no charge for the conference. It's a free conference. They just ask you to pre-register so that you can they can have a head count, and it's expected to sell out because they have limited attendance. And I say sell out, I mean fill up. And they invite donations to support it, but it's not required. And the main thing is to get the information out and have people to participate and not be turned away because we've got an economy that we have today and money issues for people. So that was the decision, and that's what's happening with it. And today we have the pleasure to have with us Dave Wellington. And I think he also has Sean O'Connor with him today as well. The two of them are going to be presenting some very important information at the Health and Freedom Conference that I had just referred to. And what we'll do, I think, is go into what they have to share with us. And then as it moves along, as questions come up that you may have, I invite you to join the conversation by, if you're on the phone line, just dial *2 on your phone keypad, and we'll see that you'd like your line unmuted and can do so. If you're on the internet and you've come to us by way of the internet, you're listening, receiving the audio that way, then just go ahead and there's a small question box right under the link. Type your question in there. It'd be real helpful if you put a first name and a city and a state and submit that to us, and we'll make sure it gets asked. And with that, I want to introduce Dave Wellington. He's been in the freedom movement since 1981, and he started doing freedom movement-related paralegal work in 1989, including working behind the scenes and getting some favorable published court decisions, even including recovering real estate after the IRS claimed to have sold it, that's quite a feat. He's been working in association with groups like Freedom Law School since the mid-1990s. And with that, I want to addressing the topic, stopping foreclosures and getting rid of mortgages. And since I don't really know Sean, I'm sure he can provide an introduction of Sean. But with that, welcome, Dave. How are you?
I'm doing okay. Thanks for the introduction. Is Sean on the line?
Yes, I'm here, Dave.
Oh, okay, good.
Great. Welcome, Sean. Glad to have you both. And I think maybe if you want, it might be really good, Dave, to just go back a little bit and tell us your little journey, how you came to be involved in this movement, and then specifically moving up to how you became involved with what you're representing here today. That might be a good starting point.
Okay. Well, going back then, that's like over 20 years ago. Back in the early 80s, it started with somebody putting a little message under my windshield wiper about local meetings that were happening in Southern California, and went and attended one of those. It was goes back quite a ways. The name of the organization was Your Heritage Protection Association. Some people on the call might remember that. They grew pretty big in the 80s and then kind of collapsed after they got attacked. But they were talking about the tax issue, the money issue. And that got me interested in the study of law, and I eventually became a paralegal and hooked up with Free Enterprise Society back in the mid-80s. Started doing paralegal work in 89, and then found out about Payman's organization that he started in the mid-90s, and been associated with both organizations since then, and been doing paralegal work. A lot of it related to tax and civil rights stuff. But for today's topic, I really had not looked at that issue until probably about 2-3 years ago. And since I had not been involved with mortgages, I really had not paid a lot of attention to them. I started seeing, I started following along with what was happening, and we'll get into the details of that as we get into this call. But what I want to start talking about is just the mortgage process and how that works, and get into why we are where we are today and what we can do. Most of us know the consumer side of the process. You go to a lender, fill out reams of paperwork, and while you're waiting for approval, they ask for more docs and even some of the same ones over and over. And when you get approved, you go to the closing where you sleepwalk through, signing more reams of paper until you nearly get your hands cramped. Then you get some keys along with an obligation to make monthly payments, usually for 30 years. During this process, one of the things that you should have signed is a note acknowledging the loan and repayment terms. And in order to secure the payments on the note, you either executed a deed of trust where the property is held in trust until all payments are made, or you agreed to a lien against the property. And if you're lucky, you also get to pay mortgage insurance on top of the monthly principal, interest, taxes, and insurance. So after you start making the payments, a lot of people may notice that the company you're paying changes a few times. And you may have been curious as to why this happened, but as long as you're making the payments, you figure it doesn't matter, so just keep paying the loan. And hopefully if things go right, you eventually pay off the note and the mortgage goes away. Now, this all assumes that, one, you never refinance, and you never buy another property or a home with another mortgage. But Earl, is that the way things normally happen?
Well, no.
Most people get on what I call the mortgage treadmill. And by that, I mean, according to the real estate industry, on average, people move every 7 years. And if they got a home, they're going to be selling that and getting into another home with, guess what, another mortgage.
Mm-hmm.
And they end up making mortgage payments for 40, 50, even 60 years of their life. And that's the consumer side of things.
Mm-hmm.
But what happens on the other side of the transaction? Mm-hmm. Unless you're actually dealing directly with a lender, all a normal person ever actually sees is what's called a mortgage broker or loan originator. And within a few days or even hours of a loan originating, they're sold in a loan buyer market, and they could be resold many times until some company decides they want to keep it. And that's the reason people see the change in the company they're paying. But this is where things really start to get interesting. Earl, let's say you had a mortgage loan, and your original lender was ABC Company, and it went through a few sales and ended up with XYZ Company. Who do you owe the money to?
Well, you would owe it to the original. I would think that would be it. I'm not aware that. Can you actually reassign obligation to someone else that you never negotiated with? It doesn't seem legal to me.
There is an absolute complete industry for buying mortgages. And it happens every day of the week, every hour of the day.
But is it actually legal? Is it a binding situation to you?
Oh, yeah. let's say that instead of dealing with a lending institution, you are dealing with somebody that you might know. But the note that you sign is pretty much a negotiable instrument. It can be sold and resold. Just because the loan originated with one particular lender does not mean it has to stay there. It gets sold.
They can't
and
change it, right? They can't change it, right? Okay.
They can't change what?
The terms of it. They can't, monkey with that. That stays the same, but they can reassign it to someone else that will enforce it or see it through.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Now, each time a loan is sold and bought, there has to be proper documentation about these transfers. And a lot of what is required is covered by the commercial code of each state for what's called a holder in due course. And most states have adopted uniform commercial codes, which means it's the same way of doing commercial transactions in each state. So the documentation for these owners of loans being transferred from one to the other is going to be pretty consistent from state to state. But here's what's happened over the past several years. Instead of the loan ending up with a single identifiable owner, they were packaged up into blocks numbering in the thousands and then sold around the world as investments to multiple parties. And then there's a whole world of derivatives that spun off from that, but that's something that I don't need to get into it right now. But here's the interesting part. In the process of doing this bundling, most of the actual notes disappeared. They were just lost. So what that means is we have a situation where there is no actual loan owner. Now, I was reading some comments yesterday from an attorney in Florida who said, asking the bank to produce the paperwork is just the beginning. He says lawyers who take the time to study the mortgage notes and the securitization agreements will almost always find deficiencies and sometimes outright fraud. And he said, quote, these loans are so tricked up by the Ponzi scheme that became the world of securitization and derivatives that there is no owner to these loans. She says they totally failed to comply with their contracts.
Yes.
And I want to let that sink in for a second. No owner to the loan. What's the effect of that?
Hmm.
Earl, what's the biggest hammer lenders have concerning mortgages?
The biggest hammer? Well, you could lose your home, you could be foreclosed, right? I mean, is that what you're referring to?
Yeah. Now, we talked about the note being the real obligation. Can someone bring a foreclosure action if they don't have the note?
They could not if you challenged it. If people just didn't know, they might just fraudulently move on through and do whatever they do, right? If no one challenged it and said, wait a minute, you can't do that, where is the original note, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the question was just if they have the right and standing to bring a foreclosure action if they don't even have a note. It would be like, your postal carrier bringing a foreclosure action on your property. He doesn't even have a note.
Yeah.
there's no difference. And this issue is actually starting to get some traction in the courts. Over the past three years, many foreclosure actions have not only been delayed, but actually dismissed for lack of a note. And there's been cases in the bankruptcy courts where mortgage creditor claims have been rejected for the exact same reason, lack of a note. And it only makes sense because to allow anything else would effectively say that anyone can foreclose based on a note they don't even have. And that makes no sense at all. Now, there's two types of foreclosure actions. You got judicial and non-judicial. And judicial means they have to bring court action. Non-judicial means they don't have to go to court. But in a non-judicial foreclosure, they do have to follow some very specific statutory steps as well as anything else that might be in the mortgage contract. And what type of procedure is used depends on state law, and it can also depend on what's in the contract. Now, when there's a judicial foreclosure, of course, you have you at least have the opportunity to possibly raise the issue regarding the lack of a note as a defense. Big problem comes in when there is a non-judicial foreclosure because they don't have to go to court. There's no opportunity for anyone to even raise the issue and no judge to possibly stop the proceeding. You're going to say something?
No.
Okay. So that's where we are. And that's where the group comes in that I'm putting together with Payman at Freedom Law School and Sean and one other person that we've been talking to. We're going to be building on the road that's already being paved by others from these other judicial actions that have been brought. And there's one out on the East Coast, I think it was in Maine, where a judge issued a ruling that basically effectively shut down foreclosures in that state where the party bringing a foreclosure action doesn't have a note. So it's becoming a big, big deal. It's still not, hasn't mushroomed into anything big yet, but the issue is a huge deal because it affects the ability of the party claiming to be the holder of the note to do anything. They have to produce the note or they don't have any standing to do squat. But what we're planning to do is even go a little further than what some of these attorneys, a few attorneys out there that are onto this and helping people stop foreclosure actions. But you know, right now there's not a whole lot of people doing much of anything to stop the foreclosures, especially the non-judicial ones. And even the ones that are, I don't think they're going far enough. Because this issue doesn't just relate to foreclosures. It relates to any situation where someone is claiming a right to monthly payments where they really don't have any. So the question arises, well, how long should that be allowed to continue? If you've got a situation where you've been paying on a mortgage loan to some company and it turns out they don't even have a note, or they can't show they ever acquired the note, were they ever entitled to any payments? So this it develops a whole rabbit hole that we're putting together some programs on to deal with these issues, and we're going to be launching this at the Freedom Law School event on March, well, the weekend of March, and the particular seminar we're going to be doing is on the Friday of March 12th in Ontario. So we invite people to come out there, and we're going to be doing probably about an hour presentation on that and going through more details about you know, what people can do to address their particular situations. You got anything to add, Sean?
No, actually, David, you covered it quite well. One thing I'd like to point out is many, many people don't realize what has been happening here because they're assuming right off of the bat, coming out of the chute, that the bank is doing everything they're supposed to be doing, especially holding that note. And a lot of people don't understand the power in that note or the lack thereof. And what they're doing when they issue these mortgages, as Dave says, they're piling so much paperwork on you that you're getting writer's cramp signing everything. You don't realize that the note is just one of those documents, but it's the main player in all of those documents. And when that is gone, when that original note is gone, it's referred to as the wet note, and no one can find it, it's almost impossible for whoever was the original holder of that note in due course for him to even try to enforce it, because as the law stands now, a copy of the note is not good enough. Someone has to have that original, and then as the note changes hands, in most jurisdictions, it has to be recorded along the way, and they're failing to do that. They're relying upon the people's ignorance of what they're doing to continue what they're doing, and now that they've been caught behind the eight ball and they realize that there's a possibility of floodgates being opened here, they're going to try to seek legislation to stop this eventually.
Yeah, they may do that, and it's a good, interesting thing that you brought up about the re-recording of records with the county recorder regarding each one of these transfers, because there was an organization that was developed a few years ago called MERS, M-R-E-S, Mortgage Electronic Recording System or Service. I don't remember what the last word actually is. An organization out of Florida that basically a lot of the lenders just joined in as members, and MERS, was their job was to act as an agent for the purposes of recording just one time, and then any transfers of ownership of the note would just be within the MERS system. So they were trying to avoid, you know, having to do all these recordings with county recorders and paying all the fees and so forth. Some people on the call have probably heard of MERS. But there was one case that I read where MERS tried to bring a foreclosure action and basically was tossed out on their ear because they had, the judge said they had no standing. And the same thing is happening with these other, what they're called, servicing companies, where they just get the payments. And, you know, they're the ones that you actually send the payments to. They're called servicing companies. And then they will probably take a fee and then, you know, forward it on to whatever, on to the actual note owner. And in one of these cases, a servicing company tried to bring a foreclosure action. Again, no go. They don't have the note. They were not unable to show any ability to put any record of acquiring a note or that sort of thing. So they're done. They're stopped. And I said, this is just really getting traction over the past couple of years. And what we want to do is, number one, stop the foreclosure crisis, because, I mean, this has serious effects on, you know, big on communities. And I've heard, and maybe some people on the call, maybe out in this area, but I've heard that out in Detroit, there's 10 block square areas that are vacant of residential homes.
Really something.
Yeah. And, you know, a home is the number one asset that most people will have. Mortgage is the number one liability that most people will ever have. But if we can stop these foreclosures, I think we can stop the downward spiral that's going on in these communities. And then the number two would be to deal with people in possibly pre-foreclosure situations, and all the way up to the other end of the spectrum where people are not having any problems with mortgage payments. But still, I mean, why pay someone who has no right to the payments?
Well, yes, and I'd like to bring up another thing, too. When the housing boom was going on and the mortgagers and the banks and everyone saw the housing boom and they started getting people who couldn't otherwise afford housing or houses into these houses at low rates, people that couldn't afford it, really couldn't afford it, were being brought into these homes unknowingly facing the future prospect that the payment on these mortgages were going to go up drastically and the interest rates could vary to the point to where in 5 or 10 years down the road, they weren't going to be able to make these mortgage payments. The bank knew it when they did it, and foreclosure proceedings would stop. The houses and would get short-sailed back out, and the bank would collect not only their original mortgage, but the government would even come in on the short sales and cover the amount of the value of the house at the time that it was originally sold. So the bank doesn't lose. In fact, they make money doing this. And through this process, what they have done is they've put thousands of people out of their homes unsuspectingly, and the normal guy on the street has really been dumped on by the mortgagers and the banks. They really have, unknowingly, and it's very unfortunate, and this may be their opportunity to save their home.
Okay. Well, one thing that I was, I'd heard about where this issue had come up a little while back was, I think I saw it first, I don't know if it was on MSNBC or CNN or one of them, but there was a representative from Ohio, Marcy Kaptur, and she was championing this whole thing, telling people stay in your homes, ask that they produce the original note. And she says that will stall the whole thing because you want to be in a negotiating position. And when that happens, a lot of times, then all of a sudden they just kind of flip over. They either leave you alone or they're ready to come to the table and really renegotiate everything to more to your favor where you can make it work out. So I thought that was interesting. She was putting that out, insisting that people not just fall prey to this because in almost every case without exception, they cannot produce the note. At the very least, it will stall it for a long time. In many cases, they just walk away from it. So that's interesting. It's you're kind of confirming what she was saying a while back, and you guys are right on it. So that's great. I know it's relief to a lot of people's ears to hear this type of thing and know there is something they can do about what may be coming against them and scaring the heck out of them. Pretty frightening to think you might lose your home and suddenly go homeless if you're in that situation. If you guys would like, I've got a couple of questions that came in on the internet that we can move into if you'd like to do that.
Sure.
That work? Okay. Scott in Madison, Wisconsin says, can you touch on the AFV, accepted for value issue? Is that something that applies here? I'm not sure what that is exactly.
I don't know. I'm not really that familiar with that issue. I've heard about it, but I can't really comment on it.
I can't either. I'd have to have it put in a better context than that.
Okay. All right, maybe if I don't know if this person would like to clarify a little bit more, but they're welcome to perhaps do that so that it'd be a little more understood what they're asking. We have something here from Robert in Arizona, and I'm not sure. I rather than read it out, I would say that I would invite Robert to maybe clarify a little bit more about what he's referring to here. It's something about filtering out people we don't want people heard, and Dr. Orley Tates is an example of this. We just had Orley Tates on last week, and she was on with us a full hour, and I think a little more then, and we didn't filter anything out. So I'm not sure what's being said here or what's meant, but certainly we want to represent information and not filter things and try to censor stuff. That's not our intention ever, so... I don't know how this person got that impression. We have, says Austin, I'm trying, they're having some difficulty with the audio part. They've tried different ways to do it, and I'm not sure what to tell you because we checked every way on our end. We're not finding any difficulty. I would say if you're also refreshing your page, try doing that a few times and see if that makes a difference. Many times it does. Other than that, I don't know because we can't find anything on our end. We've checked it out. Our tech wizard has done that. So I don't know what to tell you. I wish I had an answer. And if whoever would like to join in the conversation today, any questions you have or a brief comment, I would invite you to dial *2 on your phone keypad, or if you're online and listening via the internet, then type your question into that small box underneath the link and submit that to us, and we'll be glad to make sure that question gets asked. Are there other areas regarding this that may be helpful for people to understand or to know about, Dave or Sean, that you can think of? I know you've covered it pretty clearly. Are there common misconceptions that can occur about what's going on? I know you covered a little bit of it. Are there some others that we need to be aware of?
As far as other areas, I'll just complete something that I had started earlier, and that's, why make monthly payments to an organization, whether or not entitled to it. The other part of that is, you've either got property in a deed of trust, or you got a mortgage on it, or a lien. There's ways of dealing with clearing out those clouds on title to the property, and that's some of the things that we're going to be doing as we go forward with this program. So this is not just designed for people who are dealing with foreclosure or potential foreclosure, but all the way back on the other end of the spectrum where there's no payments or problems at all with making payments. But the person in your organization you're making payments to doesn't have a note. Why make the payments? And we're going to be dealing with clearing away those types of claims where it was deed of trust or a lien.
Okay.
Right, and I'd like to add something, elaborate a little bit on what Dave has been saying, too. And it sounds quite simple when you say, you go to the mortgage holder or whoever is servicing the mortgage and you say, where is the note? And they take the position or they don't answer you or respond to you or ignore you and won't discuss your question. That's quite simple question of where is the note. As all things, when you get into the courts and you get into legal proceedings, what seems simple on the surface can get real complicated. So if anyone has an interest in this, I would encourage them to speak with someone that has information and experience in this area before they run off and start making inquiries or start taking action that they may not be prepared for the results or what will follow when they decide to take the action or they're not prepared to deal with it when it comes. As I've said, things are not always simple when it comes to areas of law like that, regardless of how it sounds on the surface. It can become complicated. So, again, I would just say if this is an area you're interested in, really do consult with people that have experience in this area before you run off and just decide, I'm going to do this and we're on our way. That's what I have to say on that.
And one example would be the majority of mortgages are secured by a deed of trust, and that deeds in a trust until all the payments were supposedly made. And what they do is, in the majority of the cases, right around about 80%, I think, are in non-judicial foreclosure states. So they're going to be doing a non-judicial foreclosure, which means it doesn't go to court. Which also means there's no opportunity to necessarily raise this lack of note issue, so what do you do?
Exactly.
And that's something that we're going to be working on in the program that we're developing. And there are strategies that we have already that will be addressing this issue.
You guys, that what you're saying there is very – people really need to hear it because – whether it's the things that you're speaking of or whether it's in the taxonomy movement or whatever, people will hear someone speak and they may get a little bit of information and they say, I've got it. And so they go out and they take this massive action and the next thing you know, they get chewed off and they wonder what happened and they didn't take the training. They didn't go for the full learning of the whole situation. They took one little of it and ran charging out with it and got shattered, and they wondered why because they didn't have the full understanding. They didn't know, okay, when you do this, you need to know about that, and then you need to do this. If this happens, then you need to do that. You need to have all those strategies, and it doesn't come with just hearing a quick little lecture. It might take some consulting. It might take some studying, looking at, you know, reading some things, learning some stuff, getting some stuff under your belt, or maybe even having someone alongside with you that is ready and handy to consult with and make sure you're taking the appropriate actions. So I hear that. I so many patriots get dashed on the rocks by this type of thing. And then they discredit the movement and say, these guys are all a bunch of whack jobs. They send people out here to get crucified. And they get crucified, and then they claim this, that, or the other. They're all a bunch of idiots. You know, they're just destroying people's lives. Well, if people would be a little more wise and realize what they need to go armed with, you know, you don't go, fight a war with no training and just a BB gun or something, you know.
Right.
Yeah. And to kind of springboard off of what you're talking about, you know, in some of these cases, it's probably going to take some legal action in a court to clear away these clouds on title. And, of course, unless somebody's got some experience with that and know about these particular issues, they're going to be lost.
Absolutely. We've got Benson and Colton. My first and second trustee is with Chase, who services the loans. Will your program help me to help show what the bankers are doing is a disservice?
Not quite sure I understand the question. But one of the things that we're going to be doing in our program is doing the inquiries to these different institutions to first find out, well, do they have a note?
Yeah, and that gets interesting, too. What is it, Dave? Bank of America and Deutsche Mark is having a contest over these bundles of mortgages that they've been trading back and forth, and then this note issue. We have the banks suing the banks right now over this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think Deutsche Bank sued Bank of America over some mortgage notes, or I should say mortgages. I don't know if they actually had any notes that Bank of America sold to Deutsche Bank, and mm-hmm. Deutsche Bank is finding, well, there's no notes. What rights did we get for all the money that we paid?
Yeah, such fraud layered upon fraud layered upon fraud, right? I mean, there's just
yeah.
so much crap that goes on. And you don't call it. It just keeps going on. That's why it's good that so many of us are calling a lot of this stuff and saying, wait a minute, you know, show me this or answer this question or provide this proof.
Right. Yeah. And this, you know, you bring up the fraud issue. Depending on what was going on in a particular situation, there could have been fraud. If a person was allowed to believe that they were obligated to continue making these payments to this particular organization, and there really wasn't any obligation, that's fraud.
Well, especially if they go and they refinance it and they ask about it and everybody ignores the issue, that's fraud on top of fraud. It just keeps mounting once the issue is brought up and they start ignoring it. And that's what the banks, we've seen a tendency for the banks, when you write them and ask them where is the note, they don't want to talk to you. They won't return your letters. They won't return your phone calls.
Yeah. And you know, when you start doing these inquiries, you're probably going to get one of maybe four responses. Either they're going to ignore you altogether, try some delaying tactics
mm-hmm.
to avoid producing a note, or if produce the note, or if they're really naive, admit they don't have one.
Mm. Yeah.
And either way, I mean, you have to decide, okay, what's the next step? And that's what our organization is going to be dealing with.
Have you had any of them maybe come back and claim that that's irrelevant to the issue? You still owe your money. You need to take care of your obligation, Mr. Smith, or you know whatever.
But, well, actually, that has been suggested, hasn't it, Dave? I don't think the courts are receiving that real warmly.
No, I wouldn't think they would. There's probably stuff you can do too if they're not responding or they're not responding appropriately. There's probably then something that can be filed with the court and change the tune of what's going on a little bit, I would imagine.
Yeah.
Turn up the heat on them. And people would need to understand what that is. They don't just go out and try to guess it and do it.
Yeah. So what we want to do is like I said, do something to help stop this foreclosure crisis, as well as potentially get people from an upside-down position in real estate where they're owing more than what the property's worth, because those are not good situations.
Yeah. We have a guy in Nashua, New Hampshire. How can you find out who holds the wet note before you spend money on an attorney?
That's one of the things that we are going to be dealing with. In our organization, and we're going to be launching this at the Freedom Law School rally on the weekend of March 12th.
Okay, that'll be an exciting thing then. That's going to be really good. Welcome news people's ears. You know, for that for folks that's a real relevant issue to, that in itself would be worth everything to be there for that. And we've got Tracy in West Palm Beach. What would prevent the banks from acquiring your signature somehow, maybe without your knowledge, and just recreating a note to prove they can collect from you? In today's world, that would not be that hard to do.
You want to take that one, Sean?
Well, first off, if they're going to do that, they're going to have to prove it's an original signature. I'm sure there's scientific ways of determining whether there's actual ink on the paper as opposed to ink that's been copied from a copier to show a signature. That's one of their problems. Another problem that they have is what in essence she's talking about is they're going to try to create an original from a copy, and that's real, real difficult to do. I'm not saying they couldn't attempt it, but if they could, the question becomes, could they prove it out in the end? And if they couldn't prove it out in the end, the fraud that Dave was talking about is compounded so badly it could almost be criminal.
Mm-hmm.
So it isn't a real good idea for them to attempt to do that, and I would find it difficult. I'm not saying they wouldn't. I would find it difficult to believe that they would go that extra step, because one thing that will work in the mortgage's favor, the mortgagers, and the bank's favor, is to try to keep this as quiet as possible and just deal with those who decide to come forward, than to try to heap fraud on top of fraud by doing as she suggests and creating something that doesn't exist. Because if that happens, that's going to hit mainstream media. They're not going to be able to hush that up. I think it's very unlikely, not saying that it couldn't happen, but very unlikely, and I think the party that attempted it would run into difficulties beyond their wildest imaginations.
Yeah.
And earlier I had talked about different hammers that people can have. You know, lenders can have the hammer of foreclosure. On our side, we've got the potential hammer of, okay, you got all these payments, you don't have a right to them. So looking at possibility of having to pay them back, plus potential fraud claims, which in a lot of areas can be triple the amount of the actual damages.
Right, and the hammer that Dave is speaking about can be used in the possibility of settlement, where you go to the bank and say, listen, we can come and we can hit you with this hammer, and we can hit you with this hammer, and we can hit you with this hammer until you can't get up and walk anymore, or we can settle this, and here are the terms of settlement, and we won't say anything if you don't say anything. There's the possibilities are endless, because, again, this is something that the mortgage holders and the banks, they do not want this out to mainstream America. We're talking about the mortgage industry. You're talking about billions and billions of dollars.
Oh, yeah. You're really talking about empowering people, the homeowners, the folks that generally don't realize that they have any power to do anything about anything, much less particularly against institutions, large, powerful institutions. And turning that around, well, they've literally got the whip in their hand, and they have to negotiate with these people in a way that could become a lot more favorable. So it really turns the tables.
Exactly.
Absolutely. And that's one reason that I am, you know, really excited about this program, is because it is going to empower people. They're not going to be feeling helpless and hopeless and that sort of thing. It's some kind of a potential avenue for not only empowerment, but eventually complete relief from an alleged mortgage obligation that nobody even owns.
Okay. We've got some things coming in here. We've got Austin is giving okay, well, this is too long. It's too many symbols and numbers and all that, but he's giving a task. Giving task force on judicial foreclosure rules, the Supreme Court of Texas, and gets out of quite a link. It goes from here to next week and the week beyond that. But we've got Austin is also saying that the website for Texas task force on task force on judicial foreclosure rules, September 20, 2007, Supreme Court of Texas issued an order appointing a task force on the judicial foreclosure rules to review Rule 735 and Rule 736 and to present to the court any recommended amendments to those rules. Rules 735 and 736 of the Texas Rules of Civil Procedure were intended to address judicial foreclosure of home equity loans and reverse mortgage loans. Recent legislative enactments, however, appear to warrant further review of the procedures established in those rules. Mr. W. Mike Baggett of Winstead, Sichrist, and Minnick chairs the task force. Justice Phil Johnson serves as the Texas Supreme Court's liaison. Okay, I don't know anything about any of that. You guys know anything what that is at all?
Well, I don't know anything about that particular state, and I think it's just another example of how big this issue is getting, assuming that the reason that they're putting this out is because of the lack of note issue. But it's potentially just another example of how big this issue is, and it's going to vary from state to state. Because some states will have judicial or non-judicial foreclosures, and apparently this one was dealing with judicial foreclosures. I remember last year, California, I think it was in the last spring, California issued a moratorium of like 9 months or a year on foreclosures. And yeah, that's just another example of how big this issue is and how seriously it needs to be addressed.
Yes. Well, Annie in Lake Park says, do we have to send in a BC bond and indemnity bond prior to sending AFV on our bills, i.e. utilities, phone?
Can you repeat that?
Okay. Do we have to send in a BC bond and indemnity bond? I don't know what BC stands for. Prior to sending ASV on our bills, i.e. utilities, phone, et cetera.
I don't understand the question.
I don't see where it relates to
mortgages at all.
Okay, if it relates to mortgages, then certainly, Annie, go ahead and if you can rephrase it a little differently, be as clear as you can so that we can understand it. But if it doesn't relate to mortgages, foreclosure, you know, that type of thing, then it may be not relevant to today. But thank you. Tracy in West Palm Beach, I guess that is why you should always sign your notes in blue ink, as it is, is harder to copy also, right?
Very, very good suggestion. Very good suggestion.
Okay. Let's see. Oh, Scott in Denver is asking what I was going to be asking, website, if any. So you guys, give us some contact information. If there's any website or way to get in contact with you guys, people are going to want to do so.
We do not have a website yet. Like I said, we're going to be launching this at the Freedom Conference that's coming up in March. We're also going to be giving people that attend the conference preference as far as what we're doing. So if you can make it out there, this is a good reason as any to get out there, especially if you're having any kind of a mortgage foreclosure potential situation.
Okay. Yes, that would certainly be good. I don't know if you want people to contact you at all between now and then, if there's any email address or phone number they call or anything, or just leave it to the event and then from there on, or how do you want to handle that? Any contact at all?
Yeah, right now all we have on the agenda is launching the program at the event. We probably will have a website and so forth later on, but right now we're just concentrating on the launch for the event.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll certainly look forward to that, and then maybe even depending, we can see about providing more information on that once that happens. And then Austin says, here's the search criteria for a plethora of information on foreclosure. Is Texas a non-judicial foreclosure state? I don't know if you guys would know that or not. Do you know if it's a non-judicial foreclosure state?
I don't know about Texas in particular. I do know about a couple of states. California is optional. For example, they can go non-judicial or judicial, but once they go down a particular road, they can't go and try to do the other way. I know in New Mexico, for example, it's a judicial foreclosure state, so if somebody wants to foreclose, they have to bring a court action. So it's going to differ from state to state, and I think in a lot of the non-judicial states, they also have the option of bringing a judicial foreclosure action, and when they do that, part of the difference between the two is if they bring a judicial foreclosure action, they can also try to get a deficiency judgment against the property owner for any amount that of loan that they don't get from the foreclosure. But if they do a non-judicial foreclosure, whatever they get from the sale, that's it.
Okay. Scott in Denver, the one that asked about the about any website, he says, what if we can't get to California? I assume he's saying can't get to the event. One thing I would say on that myself is that our publisher, George Shepherd, is working on several different things in regards to this conference. And if for whatever reason the folks can't make it, and which it would be a shame because it is way more than just sitting and hearing presentations. There's so much networking, connecting with the speakers that are there, one-on-ones, making associations, and very unusual vendors and attendees. It's just a whole plethora of experience. It's amazing. But I would say that stay tuned. We may have some information on that coming up right on the conference or just shortly thereafter. And so that, people can take advantage of as much as possible that we can make available for them. So we'll have details.
Yeah, I would say for now, for people who, for whatever reason, would not be able to attend the conference, to contact Freedom Law School after that event.
There you go. That would be it. That would be perfect. And you know, referrals can be made from there and information can be provided. Okay. Let's see. Well, you guys have been really clear, and it's not, you know, something that has to be that complex for us to understand the concept of what you're offering. And I know that you don't want to jump the gun and, you know, tell every detail of every single thing you could possibly say about it now, because, you know, there is this special presentation where you're going to launch, and that's kind of what that's for. So we don't want to try to give every little shred of it right here. So stay tuned, folks, and I hope we've given you an idea today of some of the value, as well as the preceding weeks that we presented folks that are going to be special presenters at this conference that's coming up. And we're referring again to Freedom Law School's 2010 Take Back America Health and Freedom Conference in Southern California, held March 12th through 15th. It's chock full. It's going to be at the Ontario Hilton Hotel. And it's actually a conference that you can sign up and attend free. For those who can and will, we encourage donations to help support Freedom Law School's efforts. It's you can find out more information by going to freedomlawconference.com. That's freedomlawconference.com. And, you know, certainly check that out and see what an incredible conference it is. I've been the last several years, and I think you have, Dave. I don't know, Sean, if I've met you before. You've probably been to them, too. It is quite an experience. It's a do-not-miss type of conference. Wouldn't you agree?
I've been to every one since Damon started doing them in the late 90s, and it's just something I go to every year.
Yep, and I don't think I've missed very many myself.
Good, good. All right. Well, I'll look forward to seeing both of you guys at this event. In fact, it's right around the corner. It's only, just a little over 2 weeks from now, just barely over there. So
two and a half weeks away.
Yeah. Let's see. We've got one other thing here. Annie from Lake Park. I have sent in a negative averment and request to produce the original wet ink promissory note. They have not responded, and I have sent in the final demand for payment for not responding. Should I set it for final hearing, or how to go about recovering the funds? Is that going to go too far into what you're going to present, or
I'll just comment on the process that she's using. Unless you've got something that requires a response under a law or some kind of a contractual agreement, it's probably not going to go too far. And what you're probably going to end up having to do in order to get any kind of effect is to bring some sort of legal action to get whatever result you're after.
In other words, the bank doesn't have any legal compulsion to answer.
Right. So unless there's some statute, state or federal, that requires them to do what you're asking, or something in the contract that requires them to do what you're asking, and then in either case, some sort of a penalty or some other bad effect against them, I mean, what incentive do they have to do what you're asking?
Yeah, makes sense. Sure does. Well, I would say we're...
You got to bring out the big stick, which is probably going to be a legal action.
Yep, that makes sense.
Right, and there's a variety of way of handling that, too, that we'll be discussing at this seminar, too. A legal action doesn't always have to be filed. There is, again, another hammer there that Dave is talking about.
Okay. Well, we're pretty much at the hour, and I think we've very nicely covered the information. I want to invite everyone to come meet all of us, Sean and Dave and myself and our publisher and the payment and all the folks there at the conference, all the presenters as well. and enjoy quite an experience. And I also want to say that in just a moment, if you would, each of you, Dave and Sean, if there's anything that you had wanted to mention and hadn't and you thought of now, or if you could have a final thought after I make a couple of announcements, then that will be a good time to do it. The replay of this webinar will be posted very shortly after the webinar, along with you'll find at least a couple of pages of past webinars that we have, and they're fantastic on all kinds of subjects, and invite you to listen to these and to share them with other folks. You can download and send them out. Great thing to do. You'll find them at republicmagazine.com/webinar. And, I certainly invite you to continue with us the rest of this week. Just to give you an idea, we've got what we have happening tomorrow is we have Mark McAfee, who's going to speak more on the health end of things, but he's going to address the question, is raw milk really good for you? And it might surprise you, no matter which way you fall on that issue or why you believe the way you do, it may really surprise you what he has to say, and certainly he'll be glad to address any questions you have, no matter how challenging, because he really wants to shed light on this information. And then on Thursday, we have the return of John Rapoport. He's going to speak on the deepest, darkest secrets of medical fraud. It's going to be a combination of the whole health area combined with the political agenda going on. And John is very experienced on both ends of that. And he was with us before, and he gathered a lot of questions. And he's actually going to be speaking at another conference that we're just beginning to promote starting on Thursday, the Health Freedom Conference, which is a different type of thing. It's just it's a different type of event, but John happens to be speaking there, and we'll be touching into that at that time. So I invite everyone to join us the rest of this week. We've got a really incredible lineup, as we will next week and continuing on. So with that, Dave and Sean, if there's some final comments you'd like to share with us, that'd be great.
You want to go, Sean?
Go ahead, Dave.
Okay. I'll just say that I am just really excited about this, turn of events that's been happening over the past few years that's led up to this. I think if we're going to be successful in doing what we're doing, the banks are just going to be getting their just desserts. They've been... And I just being absolutely abusive, I think, with people, especially when it comes to some people on the call may have tried to do a loan modification and just get rejected, and the banks don't even want to talk to them. So we can clear away some of these claims and stop foreclosures. I'm all in favor of that. I think it's going to, in the long run, it's just going to be helping people. It's going to be helping communities. And, there's no reason to pay somebody money they're not due or to let them take property they're not entitled to.
Right. And I think that it's an ideal opportunity now for the people that made this country to grab the American dream once more and be able to hold it in their hand and say it's still real, because part of the American dream was being able to own your own home and have private ownership of property, which is the mainstay of any free society. So I think it's an opportunity for us, and like I say, for all of America, to grab that American dream again.
That's great. Well, I appreciate you guys, and there were I thought we had our final questions here. If you guys have a couple more minutes, and then we'll definitely close off. We have Lynn in Kennett Square, Pennsylvania. She says, as per the RESPA Act, I sent a written request to my servicer to tell me who owned my home and any change of hands from 2004 to present. They responded saying they were not quite sure what I meant, along with a copy of the arm my payment history, and the HUD sheet. In my case, there were two final HUD sheets, and they are using the wrong one to base my figures on. What do you got to say to them?
Sounds to be like they're trying to blow some smoke up you know where.
Yeah, sounds like they are. And the last thing here, Tracy, West Palm Beach. The legal service plan can provide a letter or action for a fixed fee or low legal fees if you need to go further. Anyway, that's not a prepaid legal. That was it. I didn't want somebody to think I was censoring or whatever the comment was earlier. I wanted to try to take the questions that come in. If there's anything that comes in after that, it's too late, folks. We're done for today. So I want to thank both of you, Sean and Dave, for joining us today and sharing this important information on the Tuesday Republic Magazine webinar. And I invite everyone to come meet you guys at the conference and gain a lot more information with your launch that's happening. I'm Earl Bell, and we want to see you all tomorrow on the webinar. And this officially ends our webinar. Have a wonderful rest of the day.
You stay there, Earl?
The moderator has left the conference.